Fed gets ready to change directions.
Which means it might soon be harder to borrow money.
Marketplace Midday Update is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media, hello, I'm Jeremy Hobson in Los Angeles.
And I'm Stacey Vanek Smith in New York. You're listening to the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. It's Monday, April 25th.
Coming up, we'll explain how the Fed's moves could affect the economy.
We'll dig into a new report that says China's economy could surpass the U.S. economy in just a few years.
And why are some people talking about peak coffee? Please say it ain't so.
Especially on the morning shift. These stories and more are just ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Make it a working lunch. Listen to the Marketplace Midday Update podcast for the day's top business headlines. Subscribe on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
This week could be the week the Fed changes directions. Ever since the financial crisis, the central bank has been trying to make it as easy as possible for people to get money. The Fed has been cutting interest rates, printing money, and buying up mortgages to boost home buying. Well, tomorrow, Federal Reserve officials will meet, and for the first time, they're expected to signal an end to monetary loosening. For more, let's bring in Marketplace New York Bureau Chief Heidi Moore. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeremy.
So, Heidi, if the Fed does, as expected, start to reel back its stimulus efforts, how is that going to affect stocks, bonds, and the housing market?
Well, it's going to have probably a big effect as people get used to not having the Fed involved in the markets. But more importantly, I think most people will see the impact on interest rates. The Fed has been buying treasuries in part to help keep interest rates low and make borrowing cheaper for companies and for mortgages. And so you're probably going to see those interest rates rise as set by the market starting in June when the Fed stops buying all of these treasuries.
And Heidi, the Fed and specifically Ben Bernanke has insisted that inflation is not a concern, that it's been very low. Doesn't the fact that the Fed is about to switch directions here signal that inflation is, in fact, a concern?
Yes, exactly. I mean, the Fed approach to inflation has stretched credulity a little bit because they've been saying that food prices and fuel prices are so high because of demand. Now, we're not eating more and we're not driving more.
Right.
So most people believe that those prices are going up because of inflation already. But the Fed doesn't measure food and fuel in inflation. They measure housing and wages. And of course, we have unemployment and the housing market is kind of shot. So as far as the Fed is concerned, there's no evidence of inflation. But a lot of people paying $5 for that box of cereal do see it.
Marketplace New York Bureau Chief Heidi Moore, who is blogging at our new Wall Street blog at marketplace.org. Heidi, thanks so much.
Thank you, Jeremy.
And for some more analysis on the Fed's big meeting this week, let's bring in Julia Coronado. She is chief economist with the investment bank BNP Paribas, and she joins us as she does each Monday. Good morning.
Good morning.
So is this the beginning of the end of easy money from the Fed?
Well, I think that the Fed is shifting out of drive, but I don't think that we're going to yet go into reverse. I think we're going to be stuck in neutral for quite some time. On the one hand, the economy is doing a bit better, and they want to just sort of complete the program as scheduled. But they're still balancing a very difficult situation. On the one hand, we do have rising inflation, which might suggest higher rates. On the other hand, the economy's been pretty disappointing of late. So on balance, I think that leaves the Fed just watching and waiting for a while and not trying to slam on the brakes too hard.
Not trying to slam on the brakes, but it does seem like we're coming to an end of this easy money policy that's been going on. So I want to ask, did it work, Julia?
I think we have to say that it was effective. Keep in mind that it was never a cure-all for what ails the U.S. economy. There are structural adjustments that we're in the middle of in the housing market, at the state and local government level. These adjustments take time, and Fed policy can't, you know, hurry that along. At best, the Fed's policies were an insurance policy against downside risks. And I think that's been very effective. Business confidence has returned. Consumers are acting in a more normal, healthy manner. The labor market is still recovering very, very slowly, but I think that's the best we can expect right now.
Julia Coronado, chief economist with the investment bank BNP Paribas, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Well, there's another big change coming from the Fed this week. Chairman Ben Bernanke is going to take questions in a news conference. From Washington, David Gura has more.
Expect to see Bernanke trying to explain monetary policy to the rest of us. And the hope is that the American public will gain faith in the Federal Reserve, and that would be beneficial to the economy and to our financial markets.
That's Kevin Jakes, who teaches finance at Baldwin Wallace College. Some Americans lost confidence in the Fed during the financial meltdown. And life hasn't gotten easier for Bernanke, says James Gentry, a communications professor at the University of Kansas.
He's already been dealing with some total economic illiterates who happen to reside in the House of Representatives and the Senate of the United States.
In the past, the Fed hasn't been too transparent. When Alan Greenspan spoke, everyone listened, but who understood a word he said? Gentry has a tip for Bernanke.
My advice would be just to try to make it as simple as possible.
But with economic policy, that may be easier said than done. In Washington, I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
News this morning that the Huffington Post has snatched another reporter away from the New York Times. The Times is struggling to keep readers and revenue, and apparently reporters, in the new world of online media. You've probably heard about the fees users now have to pay to read stories at the Times website. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer has this report on how the paywall experiment is going 1 month in.
The Times says it's got more than 100,000 new online subscribers so far. Magnus Hoglund follows the media business for Law360.com.
Yeah, I would say that seems pretty decent in just a few weeks.
But the Times needs about 250,000 new subscribers within 18 months for the experiment to succeed, according to Ken Doctor. He's a media analyst for the Outsell Research Group. He says if the Times reaches its goal, it could charge more for online ads because it'll have registration information from new subscribers and will know their reading and clicking habits.
And when you combine that registration data with the clickstream behavior, then you have an advertiser's dream.
The Times could use some extra cash right now. Last week, the company reported that its first quarter net income fell by more than 50%. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
Walmart is testing an online grocery service starting in Silicon Valley with San Jose, California. Could the world's largest retailer succeed in a business venture marked by failure? Marketplace's Eve Tro joins us now to talk about this. Good morning, Eve.
Hi.
So why is Walmart doing this now?
Well, Walmart's had 7 quarters of losses for in-store sales. So it's looking to online sales for a bright spot. Its web sales were up 70% last year. Also, as it expands in markets where people can get their groceries delivered, like New York and Chicago, it wants to challenge its competitors that already do that, companies like FreshDirect, Peapod, and Amazon Fresh. I talked to Bert Flickinger at Strategic Resource Group. He says online sales require trust, so Walmart may have a little trouble there. It's known for cheap prices, not customer service. Like over the weekend, he says Walmart tried to draw in families by promising an Easter Bunny photo op, and in many stores, the bunny never showed up.
Children were upset. Parents were upset, saying they weren't going to come back. If Walmart couldn't deliver the Easter Bunny, it would seem that it would be a lot more difficult to deliver groceries every day.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Well, online groceries in general, though, Eve, have been kind of a tricky area. There have been some really high-profile flameouts, some local success stories. How might Walmart fare as a player in this area?
Well, I'm told 11 dot-com startups went belly up trying to do this. But then most of those didn't have any grocery experience. Walmart already sells the most groceries of anybody, up to a third of the whole U.S. market. And since it's starting with lower prices, delivery is probably going to be cheaper than other services. It's also about selection. Walmart To Go will probably have more variety than those other services. Now, Walmart hasn't spoken publicly about its business model for this, but their beta website suggests it's set to go national pretty soon.
Our own Eve Tro in Los Angeles. Thank you, Eve.
Thank you.
Markets in Europe were closed for the holiday today. Asian markets were mixed, but you know what was up, Stacey?
What was up, Jeremy?
Box office receipts. Movie theaters made about 39% more on ticket sales over the weekend than the same weekend last year, and a lot of that has to do with animated films like Rio, Hop, and Rango, which are all words that are new to me, but I guess I need to get out to the movie theaters.
You didn't go see those. You weren't contributing.
I did not, but it's all about the animated films now.
Well, we'll keep all the numbers very animated at the numbers section of our website. It's at marketplace.org.
Get Marketplace's top headlines, podcasts, and special features delivered right to your inbox each day. Subscribe to the Midday Update newsletter at marketplace.org.
to the Marketplace Global Perspective now. A report out from the International Monetary Fund says China's economy will surpass ours in 5 years. MarketWatch columnist Brett Aaron says, be very afraid. Good morning, Brett.
Good morning. Good to be here.
How are they measuring this? How are they measuring the economies?
The IMF is looking at the size of the economies, and they're looking essentially at how much it costs to buy goods and services. So in other words, they're comparing the economies in real terms. China's economy in pure U.S. dollar terms is still much smaller than that of the U.S. But that is partly because the U.S. dollar is inherently overvalued on the currency markets, and the Chinese currency is massively undervalued. As a result, the difference saying that, oh, America's economy is still much bigger than China's is a purely artificial one.
So 2016 seems really, really soon. Is this sooner than we thought?
I think it's much sooner. You know, I don't think most people have really got their heads around the fact. I mean, we know we have lived in the age of America for so long. There is, of course, no one alive who remembers anything else. And, you know, our economy has dominated that of the world, really, you could argue, since the 1880s. And we're going to enter a very different world, and we're entering it very quickly.
So what does it mean if our economy is smaller? What is the takeaway? Does it matter?
Oh, it matters enormously. Anyone who's a historian will tell you the lesson of history is you cannot stay number one when your economy is number two. It just doesn't work. Britain tried it. Other countries have tried it in history. Everything follows ultimately from economics.
Well, Brett, we'll have to leave it right there. But Brett Aarons is a columnist with MarketWatch. Brett, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Toyota reported a massive hit to production following last month's earthquake. The Japanese carmaker said today output plunged 30%. Honda's output has been cut in half.
A tough quarter for another Japanese company as well. Nintendo reported profits down 66%. The game console maker wasn't hurt directly by the earthquake, but has been hit by some new competition. From Tokyo, here's the BBC's Roland Burke.
Nintendo needs to power up its slumping sales. In its earnings report, the company says that profits have fallen by two-thirds in the past year and has been forced to slash prices to compete with other game systems like the PlayStation and Xbox. Plus, there's the looming threat of smartphones, which offer much cheaper, more portable games that may threaten all the big video game devices. Jay Defibau is an analyst with MF Global.
It's an issue for Nintendo as well as Microsoft and Sony, the idea that you can buy a quality game for $1 or $2 or $5 versus what Sony and Microsoft and Nintendo would rather have you do, buy something for $40 or $50 or even $60.
Nintendo says one way it hopes to stay ahead of the competition is with the first handheld device you don't need 3D glasses to use, the 3DS. It went on sale late in February, so we won't find out how well that's been doing until Nintendo's next profit report. In Tokyo, I'm the BBC's Roland Burke for Marketplace.
In royal wedding news, economists have worked out the real cost of this week's nuptials to the British economy, and it's going to cost a king's ransom, as our own Stephen Beard reports from London.
Forget the cost of policing the royal wedding and the cost of all that pomp. Some economists say the real loss to the British economy will be a staggering $50 billion. This, they say, is because the wedding day this Friday has been declared a public holiday, and it falls between two long holiday weekends. There's Good Friday and Easter Monday, and then May Day next week. The net effect is that many Brits may take off the 3 days in the middle, making an 11-day vacation in total. All that idleness could lop a 0.25% off Britain's GDP. But Justin Urquhart Stewart of Seven Investment dismisses this dismal forecast.
That actually when you give people time off, and they're in a good mood, and the weather's quite good, they'll be much more productive when they get back to work.
And he says the wedding may well inject a much-needed burst of optimism into Britain's depressed consumer economy. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
To Las Vegas now, Stacey. Apparently there is not enough gambling going on in Vegas.
I was worried about that.
Yeah, well, they were too. The Nevada lawmakers are considering a bill that would allow casinos to offer their guests tablet computers to gamble with, so you can take your blackjack and your poker game right back to your hotel room, or perhaps you can sit in the theater and watch the Cirque du Soleil show while you're also betting some money. So to put it another way, the amount of money it'll cost you to see a show in Vegas just went up a little bit.
Or down, you know. Or down, Jeremy.
Maybe you could make it all back, exactly.
Win big. Healthcare reform continues to be the subject of heated debate. Some opponents say the new healthcare law could hobble small businesses, but some small business owners say maybe not. From the Entrepreneurship Desk at Oregon Public Broadcasting, Mitchell Hartman reports.
Welcome to Oregon Translation, where local translators serve your global...
Get switched into voicemail at Oregon Translation in Portland, and you hear good news about the economy.
If you are calling to apply for a job, press 4.
But if you want that job to come with health insurance, might as well hang up now. Owner Virginia Anderson has 8 employees, and she'd like to offer health benefits to attract more talent.
I did look into it several months ago, and the answers I got were cost prohibitive.
Anderson's hoping health care reform will help her afford coverage eventually.
Well, that's the goal, right? But we'll see if it happens.
Paul Fronston of the Employee Benefit Research Institute says starting in 2014, state insurance exchanges will let individuals and small businesses shop for coverage. That'll give them more options, even if it doesn't reduce costs.
So an employer might tell their employees, we can only offer you $2,000 per person that you could use to go out and buy insurance through the health insurance exchange. So it facilitates the employer doing what they could afford to do rather than doing nothing.
Doing nothing is an option. Companies with up to 50 employees don't have to offer insurance. Above 50, the penalty is a couple thousand per employee. Business consultant Gene Marks is getting some interesting questions from business owners.
The average cost of health care for their typical employee is around $10,000 to $11,000 a year. If I get rid of my health care plan, I'd only have to pay $2,000 a year? I mean, why wouldn't I do that?
Then the employees could get a government subsidy to chase down their own coverage. Rick Poor has a shirt printing business in Lincoln, Nebraska. He's not ready to send his 30 employees down that road.
I'd rather have the guy that's watching the stuff come off the back of the machines concerned about quality control rather than whether, you know, Timmy is going to get his medicine.
Poor's premiums have been rising by double digits. He's hoping health reform will give him the same clout as bigger businesses to negotiate a better deal. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
The price of coffee beans is above $3 a pound for the first time since the 1970s, and experts say coffee inventories are unlikely to build up in the foreseeable future. Worse yet, some are saying we've reached peak coffee levels. Here to explain is our sustainability reporter, Adrian Hill. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeremy.
So what is going on here? Why are we talking about peak coffee?
Well, coffee production in some parts of the world is falling. Mm. Places like Colombia have seen their coffee production really just decline pretty dramatically since 2007. And a lot of what's happening seems to be related to weather issues. Mm. So they're seeing unusual rainfall. They're seeing unusual temperatures. These things are not good for coffee beans, especially the very finicky, very precious Arabica bean is not interested in big weather changes. And the problem is it looks like it's some scientists think it could be related to climate change.
Climate change, so it's not a temporary thing.
That's the big worry, and that's why we're talking about peak coffee. Right now, it's so concerning that some international organizations have actually turned to the United Nations and said, hey, let's start talking about coffee crops. As you look forward, as you start thinking about climate change globally, we need to pay attention to the coffee supply.
And what is all this going to do to coffee prices?
You want to guess?
Going up?
Up is right.
Oh, no.
Way up. Production, so coffee production is falling at the same time that people in emerging markets like India and China are realizing just how delicious and wonderful coffee really is. And the price of coffee futures, what the traders buy and sell for it, has doubled in the last year.
So not good news at all for coffee drinkers.
Not at all. Starbucks just upped the cost of its bag coffee about 12%. Kraft announced it would bump the cost of Maxwell House by more than 20%. And that's just one in a series of price hikes. So our morning coffee is going to get a lot more expensive, which is bad news for me, especially
and me
at this
as well.
Hour.
And probably most of the people listening right now. Thanks, Adrian. Marketplace's Adrian Hill.
Thank you, Jeremy.
And finally, over the past few months, women's clothing sales have been on the rise, according to market research firm NPD Group. A lot of that, Jeremy, is apparently thanks to jeggings.
Jeggings? What are jeggings?
Really? You don't know? Conan wore jeggings, Jeremy. They are jean legging hybrids. Ah. So they look like jeans, but they have a lot more stretch. You got to get a pair. In related news, the New York Times reports there's now a push to standardize women's clothing sizes and to help stop returns, but also to do away with vanity sizing. And that is when the stores mark sizes as smaller than they actually are to make shopping more pleasant.
Uh-huh. Yes, of course.
Right. So here's the problem, though, with this is that now I feel like every time I go jean shopping, I'm going to know exactly what size I really wear. And now I feel like I should go buy some jeggings.
Well, there you go. Buy stock in jeggings.
You've got to love the stretch.
In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.